Welcome back to View from the Sofa for a very special Ashes edition today. We've got my ex-gapper from Ludgrove School, an Australian cricketing legend over there. Lackey McKenzie has come on. Thank you very much, Lackey, for coming on today.
G'day, Heck. I think Australian cricketing legend's a bit but I appreciate it nonetheless.
Yeah.
It's awesome to be here, mate.
So you've had quite a good, I think it's the cricketing season for you right now, and you've played, I think you just said you played two matches in a row this weekend, and also you watched all 5 days of the Sydney match, Australia v India. How's it been just comparing it to England? Has it just been much freer in Australia at the moment?
Yeah, oh, it's been, you know, we've been pretty lucky that we've been able to get a cricket season in, and I've been able to play a full season here in Sydney, and we've also been able to have crowds back at games in stadiums. So that was pretty awesome. And, you know, going to the test in Sydney is one of my favourite things to do the whole year. It's a great way to start the year. So to go there and watch it was great. To lose was not so great. But, you know, full credit to India. They play pretty well.
Have you got any big scores this season? I think you've got a couple of 80s.
Yeah, that's right. I actually have, yeah, a couple of 80s playing third grade here in Sydney. Unfortunately, unable to convert them. They're intertwined amongst a lot of single digits and ducks. I've been running out three times for a duck this season, so that's no good. But, yeah, it's been a really fun season just to be back playing with my mates and loving cricket.
No, so if we just get straight into these questions, because as I said, it's an Ashes edition, we're not going to talk much about the England-India series. But first of all, England out in India right now, the conditions are very harsh. Of course, that's played a lot into the 3-1 loss in the series, which hasn't been great. How do you advise England to cope with the harsh Australian conditions? Because obviously they're very different to the subcontinent, but they can have the same effect on the players, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it is a really, really tough place for any team to go. And, you know, India haven't lost at home in a really, really long time. And, you know, you have to deal with a lot of factors in India. The heat is a big one. And it's, you know, something you've got to deal with in Australia. It's probably a bit more extreme in the subcontinent in terms of the actual temperatures that you get to. But nonetheless, you know, days can get up to 45 degrees Celsius in Australia, and even in the middle, it can be hotter than that. So it is something you've got to deal with over here. And then in terms of the actual pitches and playing conditions, you know, the grounds are pretty big in Australia as they comes, but the ball runs pretty well, so you get value for your shots. But the wickets are, well, they tend to be bouncier and faster. You know, we tailor our wickets because we like fast bowling. And so I think that the key for England when they come to Australia, and something that England really identified, was their bowling attack. And if they can restrict the Australians to less than 400, especially in the first innings of a test match, they're in with a massive chance at all grounds in Australia. You know, we like to score big runs in the first innings, and India didn't let us get past 400 once. In the entire series, and you know they came away with a pretty big series win. So I think for England, bowlers like Archer and Wokes and Wood are probably the ones that you want to look to exploit the bounce from. Obviously, Broad and Anderson are class swing bowlers, but you know both of them have come to Australia and not had a huge success. You know, Anderson's own, you know, despite his record amount of Test wickets, he's only got one fifer in Australia.
Oh, really?
So So I think the others, particularly Archer, you know, I think he'll really like Australian conditions, and he could be really deadly if you can get him bowling well. You know, he seems to be swaying a little bit from time to time and you know, bowling in phases rather than bowling consistently.
Yeah.
And then the batters, I think, when you play in Australia, the first sign of Australian frustration from our cricket team, if you're playing well, is when they'll turn to the short ball. So if you're playing really well, you're hitting nice cover drives and you know, through mid-wicket really nicely, they'll straight away put in a short leg, they'll put two out on the hook, and they'll bump you. And so you've got to know it's coming. It's always going to be coming.
Yeah.
And if you can get through that period unscathed, then Australia will really start to hit panic mode because they have nowhere else to turn to. So probably getting out of the way of it is the best way to deal with it, because you minimize your risk of getting out. Whereas taking it on, you might hit a few sixes and fours, but there's probably a ball with your name on it just around the corner. So I think that, you know, the England batsmen are smart enough to understand that, whether they can put that into practice. We just have to wait and see.
Yeah, even that battle in the last Ashes where Archer just bowled bouncer after bouncer. Smith got hit and then he came back on. And even though he was properly injured, he just kept on trying to hit the bouncer. And I think he got out to a bouncer a bit later on, but he did very well there. And if we just, there's a lot of build up to this Ashes. Of course, last Ashes was in England. Australia faced a lot of abuse, I think it's fair to say, especially Smith and Warner after that ball tampering scandal. But I think there'll be a lot of sledging. Oh, I think that's given. But should England be prepared for like proper hardcore abuse from like the fans and the players, or will they just be going in? Just how would they prepare to like counter that thing on the pitch?
I think you know, whenever we go to England, we're ready to cop it, and then I think whenever England come to Australia, they're ready to cop it. They're always going to cop it. You know, it's just the way it happens. You know, that's why we're such great rivals. But I think, you know, the Warner and Smith stuff, that was pretty, you know, it's pretty warranted. It was understandable. It was always going to happen. It was always going to be escalated for them and probably fit the crime. But I did feel that Smith was able to win over the English crowd a little bit by the end of, you know, he was being booed at the start of the series and so was Warner. And by the end of the series, Warner was still being booed, but, you know, Smith had scored a record amount of runs and averaged 110. So the English crowd was pretty appreciative of what he was able to bring.
Yeah.
And so they were clapping him off and whatnot. But I think that, you know, Australia, we hate Broad and Anderson. We really hate Broad and Anderson because whenever we go to England, they terrorise us. You know, they skill us. They, you know, swing it around corners. And so I think that, you know, they'll cop what they've always copped. I think the Australian public will really go after Stokes.
Yeah.
And not because of, you know, any of Stokes' public, you know, issues, or not issues, but like allegations and stuff like that and controversies. But I think we're scared of what he's able to do. You know, the scars of Headingley are still super raw over here. And you know, the Australian public will try and help our team in any way we can. If that means, you know, abusing Ben Stokes when he's fielding at fine leg, then that's what they'll do, unfortunately. It's just the way it happens in Australia.
Yeah, I think it's England's time now, because we gave you all that chat last Ashes, so 2 years later. I think that's fair enough. And then if we just talk about the bowling attack quickly, Lyon has had a history of just dominating one specific batsman. To be honest, it's just normally been Moeen Ali, and he's just constantly gets out his wickets. Which of the English players do you think? I don't think Ali will be playing in the Ashes, or he may be, but which of the English players will find it hardest to face Lyon in Australia?
I think it's a little bit hard to say which batsman in particular. I think that, you know, obviously England have struggled in the subcontinent. They succeeded in Sri Lanka, but struggled at the back end of the India tour. But I think that it's a very different spin in Australia to the subcontinent. You know, the ball doesn't spit in Australia like it does in India. It doesn't just go, you know, and turn like 45 degree angles. So Lyon gets a lot of wickets through dip and bounce. You know, he deceives the batsman. He works away at them. And he didn't do that this summer. In India, what they did really well was they used their feet to him, and they put him on the back foot. You know, Rishabh Pant would come out, and I remember in Sydney, Australia, India were four for not many, and Australia were looking like they could bowl him out. And Rishabh Pant came down the wicket three or four times to Nathan Lyon and just put him straight back over his head into the grandstand, and it completely rattled him, and it put him off his legs the entire day. And he was off his legs the entire series, but we really needed him that day, and he was completely rattled and unable to come back from it. And so I think in that sense, the footwork is really, really important to Nathan Lyon. And it's not so much the line of the ball like it would be in the subcontinent. It's more being decisive whether you go forward or back. If you're going to play him off the back foot, don't do it half-heartedly. You've got to play him right off the back foot. And if you're going to come forward, make sure your head and your weight's all coming forward. because other if you're caught in between, he'll get you out.
Yeah. And if you just mentioned the pitch doesn't spit as much as it does in India. I don't know, and I'm not sure that many of our listeners will know, what's the main difference between the Australian wicket and the Australian outfield compared to the English wicket?
Well, compared to the English wicket, there's usually, it bounces more, so it holds together in a different way to the English condition. You know, English conditions, it'll seam off the wicket. It doesn't seam so much in Australia. And it does vary a little bit from ground to ground. So the Gabba is notoriously bouncy. So Perth Stadium now, not the Wacker, is also quite bouncy. Then the Adelaide Oval and the SCG do offer a bit more for spinners. And then the MCG is usually quite slow and low, but actually last year they left a bit of grass on the top of it and it started to actually do a bit, you know, even later in the test match. So I think Australian wickets, as opposed to English wickets tend to get much, much better for batting. I think you can often find teams will get skittled in the first innings and then come back and bat really well in the second innings. Whereas I think Australian wickets tend to be quite good for batting on the first day, but then with the sun baking down on them and, you know, footmarks really come into it for the spinners, and it'll start to open up and break down just a little bit, and that offers a bit more for the spinners. So it's a lot different.
Yeah, and you've played at both conditions in the England and Australia. And if you could just say I reckon the Australia may be a little bit easier, but what type of wicket do you find it easy to score runs on, really?
Personally, I liked batting in the UK because it was harder to bounce me, and I hate being bounced.
Yeah.
So, you know, you come back over here and there's a bit more in the wicket for the bowlers in terms of bounce, and so you start getting balls whizzing past your grill. Whereas over there, you can almost bat without a helmet on with a helmet on, no helmet on, and outside your crease, and you just get nice half volleys all day. Yeah, they swing a bit, but if you can see off the new ball, you can usually cash in. In the V, but yeah. I actually did really like playing in the UK.
Yeah, and as I said, Archer was the main man to target Smith last Ashes series. Smith is going to be probably the main threat for Australia just because he scores so many ones and we find it hard to get him out. Who would be the bowler to get Smith out? Would you set a trap for him, or would you just be conventional and just set a normal field for him?
Yeah, I think the Jofra still probably has the biggest chance of undoing him. And that's just because of his sheer pace and bounce. And it really offers something that Broad and Anderson don't. And they've been pretty unsuccessful against him. But the thing about Smith is he's an incredible cricket adapter. So if he gets out one way in one test, by the next test, he would have hit 3,000 balls in that same region and developed a plan so that he will not get out in that same way.
Yeah.
Again, so, you know, teams have tried that leg side gully, you know, all leg slip tactic against him, and it's worked a couple of times, but he's able to negate it. So when they set it, he stops coming across so much to flick balls down leg side. So he plays them more through mid on and through mid off. And so no team's really been able to find a big enough chink in his armour yet to completely undo him, or a chink that he's unable to fix in the short term. So, I mean, you can try and bounce him, but he still averaged 110 in England last series when they tried to bounce him. So it wasn't necessarily a tactic that worked.
Yeah, and Tim Payne last series, I think he's a very good captain for Australia, but that Headingley test, you could tell he just didn't get a single decision right for anything. I think he's quite old now. And would you see this being his last Ashes?
Yeah, absolutely. This will be his last Ashes series. If we win it, I would not be surprised if he announces his retirement at the end of the series. You know, he's 37 or 38. Yeah. You know, he's got two kids. Before the previous Ashes series in Australia, he was so close to taking a job with Kookaburra the bat company and giving up cricket entirely. So I think, you know, he's pretty happy that he's been able to prolong his career. I think the only thing that might make him stay is a desire to get India back. I think that we tour India either next winter for Australia or the following winter, and we haven't won there since 2004. And I think that for a lot of the Australian public, and I think a lot of the Australian team, that's almost bigger than the Ashes for us now. You know, we were able to come over and retain the Ashes in the UK, and the next big thing we need to do is to win in India to prove that we're a world-class outfit.
Yeah, and so judging from current form, you watched all 5 days of that Sydney Test match. Judging from current form, who would be your strongest 11 to take on England?
Well, yeah, I think there's probably three positions where there's a spot up for grabs. So you have Warner at the top. He scores bulk runs in Australia. Then at two, you've got the choice between young Will Pekoski or the more experienced Joe Burns. And Joe Burns got the early green light against India, and he wasn't able to convert, and he eventually got dropped for Pekoski. He came in and scored, I think, 60 in the first innings in Sydney. And Pekoski's got incredible Sheffield Shield numbers, like absolutely incredible. He's got like three or four double hundreds.
Oh, wow.
But in saying that, Burns just scored 170 in Sheffield Shield. So he's not out of the runs completely. He's still definitely in contention. So I think that, and Pekoski's had to do shoulder surgery just recently. So they're still under injury cloud there. But then at three, you've got Marnus. Four, you've got Smith. And then five's really up for grabs. So at the end of the series, we had Matthew Wade in that position, and he had the opportunity to make it his own, and he didn't. And then Travis Head's come out and scored a double 100 in Sheffield Shield, and he's probably the next in line. Another bloke called Moses Enriquez scoring runs in Sheffield Shield for a really long time. He's really composed. And I think a lot of Australians would like to see him given a chance. He hasn't been given a chance before, but he's a really experienced head in that middle order, which we need, I think. The other person who I would really love to see playing for Australia, if they had the runs behind them, is Mitchell Marsh, because he hits the ball so hard, and he's obviously another bowling option. But unfortunately, he just hasn't got the runs behind him this season. So I'm hoping that at the start of the next Sheffield Shield season, he could score a few runs. But I don't really think that it's probably Wade and Head that'll go toe-to-toe for that position. And then after that, you've got Cameron Green, who is just scoring. He's just scored another double 100 today. These last three games, he scored 100 in the Sheffield Shield. Then it's 100 in a one-day game, and a double 100 in the Sheffield Shield today. So he's just a run machine. And obviously he's a bowling option. He bowls 140 clicks an hour. So, I think that's about 85, 86 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And he's only 21. So he's bright young talent. You got Payne at 7, Cummins at 8. Then I'll go Hazelwood and Lyon at 10 and 11. Number 9 is a really interesting spot for Australia now, because Mitchell Starc is the incumbent, but he's really struggled recently, not only in international cricket, in Shield cricket as well. He's only taken one wicket in the last three games or something like that. He just cannot get wickets at the moment.
Oh, wow.
But he's express pace, he's left arm, and there's no one else in Australian cricket that is like that at the moment. And with Cummins and Hazelwood bowling, kind of fast, medium, right arm, we need, for our third seamer, we want something different. So it's going to be interesting to see what the selectors do, because they'll want someone different, but there's not really anyone that's knocking the door down. So I wouldn't be surprised if Starc definitely gets at least the first test.
Could you make a case for Jason Behrendorf in any of these test matches, or is he just white ball?
Behrendorf, he's been out with injury for the last few years, or in and out with injury. He's had some back issues. And he probably hasn't got enough red ball cricket under his belt to warrant a test selection. I think there's probably another West Australian, Jai Richardson, who's ahead of him, and he bowls pretty quick, and he's he's a really bright young talent. And then you've also got the likes of James Pattinson, who's played a lot of Test cricket for Australia and is a pretty tight bowler. But again, he's right arm over the wicket. And then Michael Nisa is probably the form bowler in Sheffield Shield at the moment. He's taking the most wickets, and he's more of a seam and swing bowler, but he's not bowling express pace either.
Yeah. So we've got three questions lined up for sort of debate, if you will. We don't have our English debater. I think he might have fallen back asleep, but I'll debate for the English team. So we'll go first. Joe Root is a better captain than Tim Payne.
I'll go first.
Yeah.
I think that tactically and probably performance-wise, he is. I think he's got the ability to win matches with captain's knocks that Payne probably doesn't. But I think that something English fans might struggle to comprehend is what Payne has done for Australian cricket. He took over in the darkest time of Australian cricket, and he has resurrected him and Justin Langer just by themselves, pretty much, have resurrected Australian cricket to the point where we were able to retain the Ashes. We went to the UK and, go back to number one in the world. And so for that, I'll put him down as one of, if not the best leaders that Australian cricket's ever had, not necessarily a cricket captain.
Yeah, I'd say, so you've got to look at the two Sri Lanka test matches. Root scored highly, everyone else scored highly. The first India test match, Root scored highly, everyone else scored highly. Then that Chennai match, Root didn't score, so no one else scored. So I'm not saying that may just be a coincidence, but it just, I think Root sets the tone where Payne, like Smith can score, Marnus can score, and then Payne doesn't score, and it doesn't really affect the team. But I think that Root just always sets the tone. I also like how I'm sure Payne does this with Cummins and stuff, but he uses his senior players on the field for his opinion. And I also think, if I was going to say one negative thing about Payne in the last Ashes, he just wasn't decisive enough, I don't think. Like in the Headingley Test match, he wasn't sure whether to review, he wasn't sure whether to bring the fielder in or out, and he was sort of just looking up to Justin Langer. He relied on Justin Langer, and I think that Root was able to make those decisions by himself. And I think I agree with you in saying that Payne has done so much for Australia, but I think Root is the better captain on the field. But Payne, if you wanted to like reinstate your team into like the cricketing world, then you go for Payne. But if I think Root on field is a better captain.
I know it's supposed to be a debate, but I probably agree with you.
Yeah. And then we're going to go to the second question. The Australian bowling attack is the best in the world at the moment. You can take this one first.
I think that we have the most talented bowlers in the world at the moment. Mitchell Starc, when he's playing well, can dismantle top orders and lower orders. Pat Cummins is the best bowler in the world. There's no doubt about that at the moment.
Yeah.
Nathan Lyon is probably the best spinner in all conditions around the world. He takes wickets wherever he goes. And then Hazelwood just doesn't give anyone an inch. So I think that I don't see any bowling attack in the world that is as class as us. I think the Indians have good depth, and they showed that when they came to Australia. They had net bowlers who ended up bowling for them in test matches and taking, decent wickets. I think Mohammad Saini and Siraj, they weren't expected to play a big role, and in the end they did, and they were successful. But I don't think that they're anywhere near the calibre of Cummins and and Starc and Hazelwood.
Yeah, I agree with you there. I'd say it's quite tricky though, because you've got to factor in every single condition. So would Australia be able to go to India? Because do they have enough depth in the spinners to play three spinners or two spinners and all of those spinners to get wickets? I agree with you saying that Cummins, Starc, or your seamers are the best in the world, no doubt. I think England just aren't there because they're so inconsistent, because we have one good bowling attack, but then Chris Silverwood just goes, oh no, we want to change that. And they're not playing like Chris Wokes or anything. And then they only bowl broad for three overs in one innings, which I find quite amazing. I think And because Australia are just so consistent with it, they have their star players and they know that they're going to play when for England, well, because of the squad rotation, at the moment at least, we're just very inconsistent with our bowlers. And also, India, I'd say, well, because they haven't played any Jasprit Bumrah, but their spinners, Ashwin and Patel, took 10 wickets between them in one innings. They've got 2 fifers each. I'd say, but you just got to factor in the conditions because they're so good in these Indian conditions, but would they be able to go to Australia and get Smith out quickly? I'm going to have to give that one to the Australians because they can do so well all round. It's quite hard to say. I'd say India come in second and something like maybe South Africa third. I don't say England at the moment aren't in the position to challenge the school board at the moment. That's quite annoying there. And then our final question up for debate. Australia will once again retain the Ashes.
I think they will. I think they will. I just think that England are not in a strong enough position in their cricket at the moment to come to it. You know, it's such a monumental task to come to Australia and beat Australia in Australia. And I don't think that, I think that England are still looking for the right makeup of their team. I think they're still looking for, you know, people like Stokes and Burns when he's playing to step up. You know, Root's being able to step up, but those players are, you know, are not quite there yet. And, you know, I know Stokes stepped up at Headingley, but I think he, you know, he really didn't step up in India when his team probably needed him to. They needed him to grit and fight. And, you know, England send teams to Australia and it's just a graveyard for English players. You know, I looked at it just before this, and in the last two series, these are the names that have never played another test after the Ashes. So there's Tim Bresnan, Chris Tremlett, Graham Swan, Scott Borthwick, Jonathan Trott, Boyd Rankin, Michael Carberry, Pryor, Panesar, Kevin Peterson, Jake Ball, and Mason Crane. That's just in the last two series alone. All of those players played in the series and then never played another test again.
Oh my God. Well, so, yeah.
Like, it's a tough place for anyone.
Yeah, that's a huge stat, especially KP. I wouldn't think KP would be able to do that, but that's a massive stat. So that's our debate over. I'd say Australia. Oh, wait, no, I haven't debated. Sorry. That's my bad. So I'd say, yeah, Australia will retain. I was actually going to put on this, Australia will retain the Ashes with a whitewash because I think that, I mean, I'm not doing wonders for that because I just, well, if I was going to argue England, I'd say if England would win a single test match, it will be a test match where either Smith or Marnus is injured, Archer and Wood are bowling the quickest they can and for 20 over stints, or not 20 over stints, but a long time. And then the batsmen, the openers, because our opening partnership's been awful. In 71 matches, we haven't had a single 50 partnership. I heard that stat yesterday. So I'd say opening partnership would be key. Archer and Wood bowling express pace for a long time. And just one spinner like Jack Leach could get out that 5-6-7 order. I think that would be our only looking to win the match.
I think maybe at Adelaide, you know, with the, it'll be a day-night test. You know, you can have Broad and Anderson or even just Anderson swing the ball in that test. And if you can have Archer and Wood, you know, bowling express pace, I think there's not ever too many runs scored in day-night test matches. So I think that's probably the biggest likelihood of a win for England if they're failed to pick one ground.
Yeah, that's fair enough. So that's our debate over. I have a few Ashes stats up, which I was wondering if you could... I'll say it, and then if you could guess the player. I'm not going to go for, like, the most run score because Bradman just does all of that. But I'll go for the probably the most embarrassing one, like most ducks. So we'll start with most ducks. Do you know who has it? I can tell you he's an Australian, and he's got 11 ducks in 52 matches.
It's got to be Glenn McGrath, surely.
So it's actually Sidney Gregory. Gregory. Yeah, I'm not sure about him, but 11 ducks in an Ashes.
11 ducks. Yeah, that sounds like my season playing third grade, mate.
Yeah. And then we go for most 5-wicket hauls. I was quite surprised about this, actually. It's not someone who you'd expect. He's got 12 5-wicket hauls in only 20 matches, and he's an Englishman. Ooh. Yeah.
Oh. Because I was going to go Shane Warne, but if it's not...
Yeah, that's what I was...
Is it a recent English player, or is it an ancient...
He's quite old, I think.
Quite old. Oh, I'm sorry, you're going to have to...
Okay. Oh, it's Sydney Barnes for England. 12 5-wicket hauls in 20 matches. I don't know why he didn't carry on playing, because I think he got dropped quite soon. And then best bowling figures again. Yeah, best bowling figures again. This is not who you would expect it to be. I can tell you he got 19 for 90 runs at Old Trafford in 1956, if that helps.
He must have taken a 10-wicket haul, and there's only been two taken in Test cricket history. One was by Anil Kumble, and the other...
Englishman.
Yeah. It wasn't Botham.
He's got the same initials as your head coach.
JL. I'm not going to get that.
Jim Laker. He got 10 in the first innings and 9 in the second, and only went for 90 runs in 1956. I think he was. And then we're going to do highest partnership now. I can tell you it's 451 runs in 1934, so that must give you a good indication of who.
Okay, it's got to be Bradman.
Yeah, that's the first one. BP is the second one.
No, it's not Bill O'Reilly.
It is Bill.
Bill. Is it Bill Ponsford?
Yeah, it actually is. That's good. It was Don Bradman and Bill Ponsford at the Kia Oval in 1934.
Where's the Kia Oval?
The Kia Oval? Come on, that's just the Oval. That's the...
Oh, the Oval.
The Kia Oval. That's a huge ground. And that was in 1934 for 450 runs. And then the most Ashes matches, I think we've already heard of him, 52 matches.
It's got to be the King, surely.
No, not Bradman.
So it's one we've already had?
One we've already had, yeah. Quite embarrassing.
Oh, the one with the most ducks, Sidney Gregory.
Yeah, Sidney Gregory, yeah.
How do you... Get away with... He must have been a bowler. There's no way you could get 11 ducks and...
52 matches. Yeah, and then we're going to do... Because our last stat, I'm quite happy about this one. Highest overall team total. It was 1938 at the Oval. If you just say the country and the score. I can tell you it's for 7 wickets.
If you're happy with it, it's got to be England with the highest total.
It's a massive total.
It's probably like 836 or something.
It's high.
Oh my gosh. We'll go 931.
No, it's 903 for 7 in 1938 at the Oval.
Do you know who scored the runs?
I'll look it up now. 1938 Oval.
Someone scored a big 100.
I'm pretty sure they all got huge scores. I had the scorecard literally up right now. Here it is. Full scorecard. It was the fifth test match, 1938. Leonard Hutton, 364. Maurice Leyland, 187. Hardsuff, 169 not out. And then everyone else basically just got 50.
Wow,
and then Bradman bowled 2.2 overs actually in that match.
Didn't get a wicket. That's how desperate we were that Bradman was bowling.
Yeah, and Bradman went in Donald Bradman was absent. No, he was absent hurt that match. He bowled two matches, injured his arm, so couldn't bat for the rest of the match. You had two absentees, Jack Fingleton and Don Bradman, in that match.
Wow.
So, yeah. Good on England, actually. So that's our stats done. That's our debate done. And we've got the full inside scoop on the Australian lineup and what to expect in this Ashes. Thanks so much, Lanky, for coming on. Hopefully you can come on later on, like closer to the Ashes. That'd be really good.
Yeah, no worries, Sek. Thanks so much for having me on, mate. It's been awesome. I'm really looking forward to the Ashes. I'm, you know, sadly, cricket's ending over here in Australia, but the prospect of the Ashes in 2021 and 2022 is really, really exciting. And I think that both teams have a lot to play for. And I think what we can't make predictions because we always seem to be surprised when it comes to big series. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, well, there you have it. Tomorrow we're on with Billy Root for a full dentist of the winter series. So if you want to hear more about that India and Sri Lanka tour, then just listen in then. Thank you for listening and goodbye.